Welcome to The Late Set. This is Nate Chenin, and I'm here to tell you about something special that's happening here at WRTI. We have taken The Late Set podcast and developed it into a radio show. The Late Set Radio Hour will broadcast at 8 p.m. on the last Sunday of every month, and our host for The Late Set Radio Hour is my good friend and colleague, Nicole Sweeney. You can hear her on WRTI's Evening Jazz. And we think you're going to really enjoy the show. There's a lot of good stuff ahead. We thought this show would be a great opportunity to take the excellent conversations that we have here on the podcast and bring them to a radio audience. And also take advantage of the fact that on the radio, you can play full versions of songs. That's something we can't do in a podcast feed. For its first episode, the Late Set Radio Hour will feature a conversation I had with bassist, singer, songwriter, composer Esperanza Spalding. The conversation focuses on her collaboration with the marvelous Brazilian troubadour Milton Nascimento. It so happens that his 83rd birthday is Sunday. Happy birthday, Milton. Not to worry, The Late Set is still a podcast. We will be back in your feed at the regular time on Tuesday. Our next episode features an Exit Zero Jazz Festival conversation with the trumpeter, bandleader, and composer Brandon Woody. But now, here's my conversation from last year with Esperanza Spalding. Well, thank you for making time for me. I know you've always got a lot going on, and it seems like this season in particular, correct me if I'm wrong, but it seems like a lot is kind of bubbling up.
Yeah, a lot coming into fruition, for sure. It feels like a coalescing time, and then you're like, okay, I prayed for all this shit, and I gotta like take care of it. It's so intense, yeah.
Yeah. It manifests and then what?
It's like looking at you like, hello, feed me. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, congratulations in advance on this album. It is, you know, unsurprisingly gorgeous. And I've been waiting for it because you've been dropping little like breadcrumb hints. I said, all right, this must be a thing. Like, you know, and it's so beautiful and so like full of light and spirit.
I appreciate that. It was a surreal, challenging, scary, terrifying, like, you know, I've had this opportunity now to work with multiple super geniuses, and you like feel, it's like nothing is fine enough for the king, you know, or like nothing is fine enough for the priestess. It's like that feeling of like, like what can be brought to this one, you know, that will feel like it's, you know, interesting to them, not in the sense of like to keep the gig, but like something that they want to sink their teeth into, you know, that like actually feels like they're not doing me a favor. You know what I mean? Like that we're really like meeting and there's something that inspires them and that, you know, like it feels mutually lifting.
That's a really good point too, because I think about Rick Rubin famously had this sort of relationship with Johnny Cash. Towards the end, he made all these albums that are very like Johnny Cash is at the end, you know, in the final chapter. And, you know, it has this, they're really beautiful, but there's a feeling of finality to it. And I'm sure you didn't want anything like that, you know? So like, this really feels alive. Everything that we cherish in Milton Nascimento's music is still thriving in this space, you know? And that's a beautiful thing. It doesn't feel like nostalgic or, you know, like it feels like new life, which is really, really special.
I'm so grateful to hear that. I really appreciate you saying this right now. Because you know, I mean, I'm sure you know what happens. Maybe this happens with writing, but the granular level that you have to exist in with an album like this, with so many layers and so many parts, after so many months of like being at that like proximity to it, I can't hear it anymore. Like, I can't tell what it is. I can't hear it or see it. I'm like not able to perceive the totality. I just hear the parts. But I do feel the joy, and I remember, which is most important, you know, when Milton was happy, you know, when we were in his house, in his room where he watches soap operas with like literally like a bed, a mattress up to like dampen the sound because he was most comfortable in there. And there would be like the take that you could, you knew like, okay. He like, yeah, he likes that. Like you could, yeah, you could feel him like let it out, you know, or it would like land. Especially remember we did some of the stuff in the studio together and a lot of his vocals. I went back to Brazil time and time again to record in that room in his house with Arthur Luna, the engineer. And, you know, we had made a demo of the song that has Paul Simon on it. So Paul Simon sang along to that, but then we needed to redo Milton's voice. And the way that Bituca, that's what his friends call him, the way he like lit up and relaxed and like expanded when he was singing the duet with Paul, it was just like, it was so beautiful to watch him be so affected and inspired by one of his, like just in real time. You know, we have been doing those vocal sessions, like, so, but that one he was like, he just like dilated. You know what I mean? Like the pupil of his spirit and his voice just like dilated and it just like, it just flowed out of him. That was like surreal to watch. Coração se aqueceu, agora ao lembrar de você. Amizade é dom que precisa merecer.
That track is really beautiful too, because you know Paul Simon is another you know, genius, like special spirit, but somebody who has I think like Milton kind of embraced his older self, you know, and like the weathered aspects of his voice, and you know, like he's, there's still something so silvery and light in his singing, but there's also like, you know, quite a bit of grain, and it is an older man's voice. He does not shy away from it. And in fact, has written a lot of songs recently that are really about the experience of being an elder in the world, you know? So there's something really deep about that communication between the two of them as people who were arguably in their prime, right? These, you know, like they both were in this sort of golden era at the same time. And here they are still with us.
I just got caught kind of checking out the adjectives that we rely on when we're trying to describe like an older person's voice. They're so abstract, actually, like seasoned or grainy. And it makes me realize, like, I think our culture is very unaccustomed to like celebrating the nuance of age and like even talking about what it is in a sound of someone that strikes us. And I know that, you know, we know it's not the texture. It's like everything carried in the like whole vehicle of the sound. And it's things that we don't have adjectives to describe because it's like quantum. It's like, what is it to have been on this earth for 80 years? You know, what is it to have been a human in that body, in that place, in that time, going through all the shit that they lived through in the 60s and the 70s, and like continuing to evolve and continuing to show up to the creative practice, like in times where they probably didn't even need to. Like they probably could have just rode comfortably into the sunset. It's like the sound of a player. Or I've heard people describe seeing Balanchine dance like later in life. I think it was Balanchine. And it's just like the way that the head would turn. It's like, oh my God, nobody can do that. Like you can't do that unless you've lived all those decades, you know? And part of why we didn't try to like carve his voice into like perfected oblivion like, what's so amazing is like the quantum resonance of this elder's life, you know? Mm. And you can't make that sound. Like, it's not a sound. It's a lived thing that does travel on the frequencies, obviously, but like, we don't even have the words to describe what we're actually picking up, you know?
Yeah. No, there is, it's a spiritual dimension in a way, right? But yeah, as you say, it's lived experience, which is just it's embodied, it's carried. Yeah.
And all the fragility. There also mm-hmm. seems like that's a piece of it. It's like
yeah, for sure.
All that power and all that force of their lives. And then, you know, like with Milton, like he needs support walking from room to room. So yeah. It's like that, like, whoa, that contrast of the immensity and the space and the potency they occupy in our hearts and imaginations. And then like that juxtaposition of like their mortality and their like mm-hmm. fragility in these human forms. It's like really, yeah. It's really wild.
Yeah. It's interesting to me too, to think about your presence in this, because probably the first time that I heard you sing was the first track on your second album, the self-titled album, and that's Ponta de Areia. And you have this, you know, youthful spirit and voice singing this song that we associate with the young Milton, right? It's like, and so I wondered, given that you came out of the gate kind of waving that flag,
yeah. You know, this is my guy, right? Yeah.
To what extent is this project kind of a full circle experience for you?
Yeah, it feels like a spiral, like full circle of an orbit or full circle of like a spiral that's widening and expanding. It's really hard to speak about that because maybe this is just my condition, but I hear the record and I'm like, oh God, I wish I would have. Oh God, if I would have had 4 more months, like, oh God, if I would have known ahead of time, like what his ideal singing circumstances were, like, shit, you know, I really like wish to do like 4 more, like I wish to get to do this process again, equipped with the knowledge of having that year long process with him. Mm-hmm. And that might just be the condition of like, it's never enough because of like the space he occupies in my life. It's like, I don't think anything, it's not full circle because like nothing can meet or touch or compare to like what his music means and how it has built me as a human, as a thinker, as a musician. And so really I have to just relate to it like this was just a fucking miracle. It was just like a gift of life. It was just all it can be is a gift. Like nothing feels like I could have prepared or like done the right steps to get there. It's just miraculous. And mm-hmm. I think there's also just some base level, like we just like each other, like as humans. Yeah. That also is like made this all possible, you know? Like mm-hmm. he's a very open and very expansive person, but he's a very particular person. And me too. And our like personalities and way of like, you know, whatever, just really were like, resonant, like we could play well together, if that makes sense.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
It's like all the kids in the playground are like, be those kids, they're like, oh, okay, I see you. And and yeah, it's not something that I would have pursued, you know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. I wasn't going for this. His son, so out of the blue, just was like, hey, you know, I want my dad to do like the right kinds of projects now, like. You should produce a record for him. That's just you two. Mm. It'll be Milton and Esperanza. And then like you produce it. And then that made me confront and confess that like, shit, maybe the power of thought and like maybe music really are spells, because all the time when I'm composing, literally all the time, I'm like imagining if I was singing that with Milton, or I'm imagining like it's only good enough to like be a demo or something if like I would show this to Milton. Like in a way that's like kind of been my inner litmus test.
Yeah. Wow,
but then none of the songs seem good enough. Like I really have like dozens, and then I was going through my voice memos like, oh no, you know, like just to try to find a few that like felt like they could live with him, you know, or like I would even expose him to, you know what I mean? And a lot of those songs have already made it onto other records. Like I remember being in Brazil and showing him Judas from Emily's D Plus Evolution, and showing him Nobles, and like showing him, you know, things that I had written in my own space, like imagining like, well, just it's like it's total fantasy. It wasn't for the sake of anything. And then it like plopped in front of me, and I was like, oh shit, I already recorded most of these songs, and like none of the demos actually like feel good enough. So let me just pick the ones that the vibe feels right and just do my goddamn best. And whew, yeah. It doesn't feel done. Do you know what I mean?
That's crazy. Yeah.
So in terms of the timeline, when was it that his son reached out to you? How long ago was that?
In November of 2022, October. He was doing his farewell tour, and his son asked me if I could come sit in. The only two dates I could do were Boston, New York. So I think it went like, I sang in New York and then traveled with him by bus to Boston and then sang in Boston. So that night that we arrived in Boston was when his son was like, pa, pa, pa. And he was like, his voice is really warmed up because he's been singing, like, you should do it as soon as possible. So then it was like, you know, scramble to try to move other things and get like a body of work together and some arrangements. And, it all felt very like life paced, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Like, you don't get to stop and go like, how do I want to do this? It was just like, bleh. And I feel that. I feel the influence of that, to be honest. And he's so magical. The music is so magical. The musicians are so magical. I'm magical too. So a thing managed to like be born from all of that. Like,
How soon did you get down there?
January.
January. Just a few months.
Yes, I went down January 2nd and was like, okay, like let's start. And then the process kind of flip-flopped. I thought we were going to do his voice first and then build tracks around it so we could just have his voice in a fresh way. But like going there, I learned that process wasn't really realistic, and I needed more time to develop the arrangements that his voice was going to go on. So then we kind of did it the other way of him coming to the studio, and we would do arrangements kind of with like his demo voice with his voice, but like letting it be a demo. And then I would come back, record his voice, and then adjust the arrangements further. It was kind of this like perpetual flipping and flopping of process. Yeah.
So he was actually like there in the studio as you were developing the arrangements. He was singing like a scratch vocal that the music could then respond to. And
well, sometimes, I mean, I showed him we went to his house when we first got there, when we came back to do like the full album. I mean, I was sending him demos. I don't think he was listening to them. He was watching soap operas. You know what I mean? I think he was just kind of like, yeah, whatever. Like, I trust you kind of vibe. I hope that's what it was. Yeah. And so then we would go into the studio, like get the basic arrangement down. He would come in, hear it, sing along with it, or be like, oh no, like that's not supposed to end on that chord. Or like, you know, no, that's too high. Or like, whatever. And then we would modify it, you know? Mm-hmm. And that, so he wasn't in the studio like all day with us. We were there like maybe we'd be able to say 11 to 3, and then we'd come in at 4 to 7, and then we would keep going until we fell asleep, you know? And then a lot of, when I went back down, like through May and through September to record his vocals, then often I would have to go back and change the arrangement, like add something, or, you know, Shabaka ended up being in Brazil one time, so I was like, oh yeah, come fill this in here. You know, it was like, very much a collage process once I knew what his voice was going to do, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Thinking about that period of time too, you know, end of 2022, spring of 2023, obviously a really deep common point of reference for the two of you is Wayne. And you're still processing very much the recency of his departure, right? So can you speak to that too? I mean, did the two of you talk a lot about Wayne? And because he popped into my head when you were talking about like the way that you guys could play together and the sort of like, it was like, obviously that was Wayne too, you know, just like the ability to fall right in. I can only imagine what it was like to just be a fly on the wall when Wayne and Milton were just hanging, you know?
It was a lot of Wayne talking and telling stories and Milton laughing. Mm-hmm. And then every once in a while, Milton telling a story and then Wayne understanding whatever he understood and cracking up and then connecting it to some other thing or, yeah. I just found a picture from, I don't even know what year. I think it was maybe from Turkey when we were both at the international, Jazz Day.
Yeah.
And I think that was the only time I was with both of them. But anyways, yes, Wayne's presence. This was all about Wayne, really, I think, at the end of the day. Like, you know, he is that guiding light for both of us to dare and be expansive and also have that fuck it, go for broke, you know, which is something he talked about a lot. Just like, yeah, whatever, that's a mess. That's it. That's what I'm talking about. Like not getting obsessed with the perfection or the exactness and trusting your life and just like going for it. Like he had this phrase of, you got to jump into the middle of the ocean, even if you don't know how to swim. Otherwise, you have to be thrown in, even though you can, even though you can't swim. And I just like, all throughout the, I told him the next time I talked to Wayne after Agostino Milton's son asked me to the record, I told him about it. And he was just like, he's like, yeah. He's like, that's what I'm talking about. Forget about it. Like, that's it. You know?
Yeah.
And we talked about him all the time. Like we felt him, you know, random weird things would happen. Like, we were working really hard to try to figure out what the hell to do with When You Dream. I made this whole arrangement and then it clearly did not work at all. And then at one moment, I was with Leo also that day in the studio. Mm-hmm. He was there. And, you know, we had spent so much time together with Wayne. Like, Leo had spent so much time with Wayne. Like, when Carolina had to go to Brazil one time and Wayne wasn't well, she asked Leo to come stay with him. Like mm-hmm. very deep. Deep time connection. And yeah. We were like beating our heads against the wall with this arrangement of When You Dream. And then finally, like, it just kind of, I don't know, something just like clicked. And we were like, oh, we have to untether it. Like, fuck it, you know? Mm. We were like, I don't even know how to explain the adjectives right now, but it made sense then. And I remember kind of going back into the recording booth where the bass was and like, you you hear somebody's voice, you don't really have like a hallucination, an aural hallucination, but you hear it. Like, that's what I'm talking about, you know? And I just like, okay, cool. Then we do the recording. We do it in like one take. Then we stop up to the middle of the song. Then we start from there and we finish the take. Like, it was just like, it just happened like that, like so easy. And then as soon as we're done, I pick up my phone for whatever reason. And I had just received a photo. Somebody just sent a photo of me and Wayne from when we played Gaia in Poland. Like, it was like that kind of shit of like, you know, just feeling that influence and presence and grieving. You know, we were all grieving too.
Yeah.
So I know I'm being very long-winded, I'm sorry, because it's such a cosmos of experience and so many layers of it, of course, about Wayne, but I felt him like a, you know, like a guardian spirit or like his words helping and guiding and keeping me from getting too freaked out or too like overwhelmed to just keeping the levity, keeping the trust and the levity, you know?
Yeah.
Just always coming back to that trust and levity that he brought to everything.
You know, you think about Native Dancer and what a high point in like recorded history.
Yeah, period.
I mean, it's like, it's a standalone thing. It's like Wayne never made another album that felt quite like that one. And neither did Milton. You know, it's like just this magical cosmic alignment. And I hear like reverberations of it on this album, you know, just here and there, like little glimmers that sonically just put me in that space, you know, or it's like almost like a head nod, like there's a little bit of that in here.
Yeah, definitely. You know? There's a lot of little head nods. And I mean, that's what's so devastating in the best way about those albums. It's like all you can do is revere them. And some things are supposed to be like that. Like, it's not for you to figure out or to study or like recreate or emulate. It's just, it's like a mountain. It's like a landscape. Like, don't touch it. You know, it's like, we just behold and revere the majesty of what these humans were able to offer and deliver. And so I can't deny that I'm influenced by the sound and the feel. And it's almost like what it makes you feel. Like, that's the goal, you know? Like, we can't do anything that sounds like that. But the feeling is so distinct, like that place that it nourishes or like stimulates. And I know that to me is the measure of like, did we feel something in that family of sensations? You know what I mean? And that's why there's some things on here that like, they don't constitute a song, but they just felt right. So I was like, fuck it, we have to put it in there. Cause that came out of this time of writing this music and like, it gave me this thing. I put that above what is it musically or what's the form or the lyrics or whatever. It's just like, no, but the vibe is the vibe. Like, that's all we can really offer, you know?
Yeah. Is there a song here that has a story that you want to tell?
All of them. I mean, I can say about Wings for the Thoughtbird. I was borrowing the model of like a Clube de Esquina or a Native Dancer, where even though it's like two people's record, obviously, like Milton maybe doesn't sing on a track, even though he's a part of the project, you know?
Yeah.
Or he is the project. So like Wings for the Thoughtbird, I was writing that in December, like knowing that this album was gonna happen. And I was writing it going like, what the hell is this? Like, this is so weird. Can I even show this to Milton? And as I was at the piano, Wayne happened to call me, you know? Mm. And I mean, there's like, you know, stop everything. You pick up the phone. He's like, what you doing? You know? And I was like, I'm working on this song, man. I mean, you know, and call him, man. I'm working on this song and I have no idea what the hell I'm doing. It's so weird. And he was like, good. He's like, yeah. You know? And so I, equipped with that, you know, I decided to put it in the repertoire. And I don't really know what Milton thinks or doesn't, but I left it in there because of that. Because I was thinking of Milton. It was very inspired by the spiritual practice that Wayne and Carolina introduced me to. And so, like, again, that's when I was like, I don't know if this even makes sense, but it doesn't have to make sense. It's a vibe, and so it's going to live here. And then Milton told me that the last thing he said to Wayne when he was visiting Wayne in LA, when he was doing his farewell tour in 2022, is he was driving away from the house and he had already said bye, but then he stopped the car and he rolled the window. Then he said, "Namyoho Renge-kyo," and then kept driving.
Yeah.
And so then he told me that story after we had decided to put it. I said, okay, then it's going to definitely stay in. Cause even though it's like, it goes somehow. Yeah. And then like, the one for Paul Simon. There's two little stories. So the one for Paul Simon, I can't find the video. I'm asking his son to find it. He said it was like a video of Milton playing guitar and he was just singing the melody, like just on the guitar. Just that no chords, no form, just that. And it's almost like everything in between is a blur. But even in that, you can like hear Paul Simon.
Mm,
you know, like, whoa. That's the genius of Milton. he wrote that little melody thinking about Paul Simon. And then just that little like cell, you like feel the personality of this person.
Wow.
And so anyway, from that, I was like, let's see if Paul Simon will do it. And one day when I find that, I'll release that little video if I have permission from them, because it's so deep to feel how that cell can like become this world, like a landscape and a world. And then this other kind of magical cool thing is Milton wanted to do Earth Song. And I'm sorry to all the Michael Jackson spirit. That's my least, I don't like that song.
Uh-huh.
I never liked that song. But I love Milton, and he was so excited to do it. And so I was kind of like masking a little bit like, okay, cool. Like, cool. Yeah, that'll be great. But on the inside, I was like, oh, shit. And we recorded it. You know, he sang. We did the whole thing. I was like, cool. And it like wasn't there. I don't know. It like wasn't quite giving. And then I don't know what descended, and I was like, I wonder if Diane Reeves would do this. So texted her, I was like, would you sing on this with Milton? Cool. When we get on the phone to talk, sent her like the thing we had done. And then she's like, this is wow, because her whole life bucket list, like all of us, was to somehow work with Milton. And it never happened. And then she got the notice that it was his farewell tour. So she like surrendered to the fact like, okay, it's not going to happen in my lifetime. We won't collaborate. So she went to go see him play. She flew to LA, got to meet him backstage briefly, and was just like, well, that was my moment. Like, cool, end of story. And she like she laid that to rest, you know?
Right.
And then, you know, 4 months later, she gets this call like, okay, sing on this. So it just, like things like that. It feels very ripe with
turning poison to medicine right there.
Okay. Yes. a lot of little things like that.
What about the flowering field? Is there a time? What about all the dreams that you said, but yours and mine?
I don't know. It was a year-long process, so it's hard to pick out like what were the things, but a lot of like who's in town right now, grabbing them to come play and try not to waste anything. Like even if we had to re-record something, trying to keep a thread of the essence of like what emerged the first time we did it. And all of this still feels like it's not the point. It's like he's an angel. He's an otherworldly being for sure. And so human at the same time, with all his fragility and complexity. And, you know, I just hope that that essence, that when he's given the space to be himself, we always feel like with anything he does. And you can feel when he's uncomfortable on some projects or like some live you can feel that he's not really comfortable. And so the goal of the project was just like, the image specifically that I was going for was like this smooth sailing ship that's like traveling kind of through this like cosmic waters, and you see it and it's traveling so smoothly with like all its beautiful sails, and it's like multicolored and it's iridescent, and he's standing off the back like throwing like armfuls of that magic. That is him, you know, like handfuls of gold dust or like, and it's just like pouring out, and the people watching it go by are just receiving it, you know, and being blessed by it. And that was like, that was the goal for the album to be a vehicle for that.
Yeah.
You know,
I think it definitely succeeds in that respect, you know, because it's, it does, you know, you said gift, this was a gift. It feels like a gift, this album, you know. I don't think anybody expected a recording from Milton at this point in his life. You know what I mean? Like solo voice and guitar, maybe we could hope for that. But to have something that is this full and to have him at the center of it is like, feels like a miracle. You know?
Oh, I'm so glad. I'm so glad. I'm so glad. Well, I really appreciate this, and, you know, still have all my notes from what I will do different next time if there's ever an opportunity like this. I don't know what it would be, but just I want to keep learning and doing things with him, you know? Like, I don't want this to feel like the end either. There's always more. He's still dreaming and thinking and processing and like imagining. And I don't want this to be the end of our collaborative life either, you know?
What has his response been to the finished album, you know, as it's now mixed and sort of?
I won't really know, you know? I mean, if he didn't like it, he would say like, don't put it out.
Yeah, yeah, right.
He's good at like letting you know what he likes and doesn't like. But I think I'll only really know how he feels about it if he asks people to play it at his house at a barbecue. Because he plays a lot. He plays Native Dancer a lot. He plays Kolobe Dyeshkina things. He plays things he's done with Elise. He plays his like recent things, like stuff he did with orchestra, like whatever. So like, I really have no way of knowing until I hear like, oh, he was playing the album at the barbecue. Then I'd be like, cool. Okay. Like, we did it. We did it. He likes it. You know, what he really responded to in like a kind of surprising way was When You Dream. I didn't know what he might want to do on that, you know, because we had really played it as like this like interlocking jazz ensemble thing. And it's, I think it's like a 9 or 10 minute track. And I played it for him on the headphones at his house and we were doing vocal tracking. And he just kept looking at me like this, you know, like, damn, you know, all through the time. And then it was over. And then I was like, yeah, it's going to have to be the last track because it's 10 minutes. And he was like, no, it's not. And I said, yeah, no, that was 10 minutes. And he was like, no, you know, no, I don't believe it. He was just so taken with the journey of it. And then I was like, well, I don't know what, are you hearing something? And he was like, yes. Just like, yes, go back to the top. So we go out to the top and he just like, what? You know, all those things that you hear, he just, you know, he just heard and he found and he did. I know he's like a freaky deaky music lover, you know. He grew up listening to Stravinsky and, you know, he loves jazz. He was a jazz bassist. But I think like seeing him at 81 be so affected by such a kind of out there interpretation of our friend's song was really, it also made me think like, oh, maybe I could have been even more out there. You know what I mean? Like, I think I was like, oh, okay, right. Like, you're weird too. That's right, I forget.
That could be the springboard for the next thing.
Exactly. Like, let's take it even more out. Yeah. Yeah, that's true.
So I think about that, you know, that full album that you did with Terry Lynn, that was like, the whole thing was a one long improvisation. You know what I'm talking about? There was like a, it was like a double album and like one side of it was like a long improvisation.
Oh, yes. It was her project. Yes. With Aaron Parks and Matt. Yes.
It was like the first part was like the social science. It was like, you know, songs, really focused songs. But then there was this whole other thing that was like just opening up the...
I totally forgot about that. That's a good idea. Yeah, because... And actually, the moments when we were doing his vocal tracking, wow, thank you for lifting that up. Thank you for that. The moments when we were doing the vocal tracking when he was the most like free is when we were waiting for the part to come we were supposed to sing. And I would just be like, ooh, like just checking my voice or whatever. And then he would like hear that and respond. And then I would respond and it would just kind of spiral into this other thing. Thank you for that. We'll see.
I love that. Especially, you know, it's like the fact that he's not touring and he's done with that doesn't mean that he's done with being a in the moment performer, you know?
Oh, no. He's, I mean, the whole, that Sassy song, the song with Ginga, was like a, such a deep education. And like, you don't, it was like that, like, you don't know anything. For all of us, everybody was like, oh, we don't understand anything. Because it was like, there were things that Milton, we had to like do a million times. He'd be like, just play it a million times for me. Just play it again and again, and then I'll learn it. Like even his own song, you know, to remember some of the stuff. And then Ginga comes in and we're planning to use the whole afternoon really just so that Milton can learn the song and then make sure he likes the arrangements. We'll do the track and then we'll cut it later. As we're learning it, Bitsuka is just like, he's just learning it. So he's learning it faster than all of us, than everyone else in the room, to the point where Arthur, brilliantly, thank God, was just like, he just started setting mics up around us rehearsing.
Yeah.
He just, and he just kept doing it. And then the next thing we knew, like an hour later, we're just doing a live, like a one take in the room around the microphones, because Bitsuka just, and it's a very challenging melody, you know? And then he was correcting us on the phrasing. Like it was so deep. And afterwards, I was commenting on that to Ginga, like, that was totally surreal watching him just learn that entire song that fast. And Ginga was just like, well, I wrote it in his sound. Like I wrote it for him. Like it sounds like him. It sounds like things he sings.
Like a tailored suit.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. And still, that was some weird magic. Like, it still didn't, from the process I had just been in with him of, like, what it takes for him to feel familiar with the song, that was, like, completely surreal. And he just sang it top to bottom, like, and was laughing, was like, bleh, like, done, like, this is easy, you know? Like, okay.
Hey.
Cool.
Bem-vindo ali. Preto retinto e andando, pode cobrindo fichai e pintando um cachimbo de bambu.
Oh man. Well, again, thank you so much. It's great to see your face and hear your voice. And congratulations again.
Thank you. I so appreciate all your encouraging comments on it. It's really nourishing because it has been so challenging and so hard to hear it anymore. Yeah, really pleasant surprise. Thank you.
Só pode ser coisa ruim, como deixa de ser.